Moses said to the whole Israelite community, "This is what the Lord has commanded. From what you have, take an offering for the Lord. Everyone who is willing is to bring to the Lord an offering of gold, silver, and bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and fine linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, and another type of durable leather, acacia wood, olive oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense, and onyx stones and other gems to be mounted on the ephod and breastplate. All who are skilled among you are to come and make everything the Lord has commanded." Then the whole Israelite community withdrew from Moses' presence, and everyone who was willing and whose heart moved them came and brought an offering to the Lord for the work on the tent of meeting, for all its service, and for the sacred garments.
Back in June, my youngest child, my son Kester, finished school. This is where you all go, "But you don't look old enough for that, Bridget." I feel old enough for that. We let him have the school holidays to relax after his A-levels. And then this week we said to him, "I think we need to find a time to sit down so we can have a talk." He rolled his eyes. Of course he did. He's no longer a child. He is now a young adult. And so really we need to sit down and talk to him about what it means for him to be a young adult member of our family. To talk about things like no longer giving him pocket money. He did not look impressed about that one. Doing your own laundry. He put a load on this week. It was all socks and pants. That tells you the stage he had got to in his wardrobe. Things like emptying the dishwasher without being asked, walking the dog without complaining, and then agreeing what we expect him to contribute to our household finances now that he's earning. Oh, yes. I wonder what your parents expected of you when you were a young adult. I imagine it will take him a little while to adjust the idea of sharing in the adult responsibilities rather than us doing everything for him, especially as he can no longer say, "But I can't do that because I've got revision to do," which was, of course, a truly brilliant argument. Over the next few weeks in church, we are thinking about stewardship. So in our Sunday services, that will be our focus. And what that means is thinking about the part that each of us have to play in God's family. Each week, we're going to explore what the Bible has to say about some aspect of stewardship. And then we're also going to hear about what that means in practice in the life of this church. So each Sunday, the preacher will give a little bit of an input from the Bible, and then a member of our stewardship team will say, "And let us tell you a bit about what's happening in our own church." Now, in church, we often refer to God as Father, and then we talk about ourselves as God's children. And that idea, that choice of language, is meant to reflect a relationship of love. But I think one of the drawbacks of language like that is that we are potentially infantilized as believers. But interestingly, God may refer to us as his children, but he treats us as if we are adults. One of the first things that we learn in the Bible in Genesis chapter 1 is that God creates the world, and then he entrusts the people that he's created with the responsibility of caring for the world. And then that is a pattern that we see repeated time and again throughout the Bible. That teaching about the idea of we are meant to be entrusted with caring for the world, I think it's safe to say that's not something the church has been particularly strong on over the past 250 years. But I think there is a real sense of rediscovering our stewardship of the natural world. That means that from the outset, we were never meant to be passive recipients with God doing everything for us. We were always meant to be active participants, playing our part in the world, playing our part in our workplace, playing our part in the place we live, the local community, and playing our part in the church. So for me, stewardship is about growing up and becoming a mature Christian who understands what it means for each of us to play our part. Now let's take a look at the reading that we heard from Exodus that John read to us. In the book of Exodus, God's people are a nomadic people led by Moses. And Exodus describes the way in which God teaches those people to be a community. He's teaching them to be his community, and a community who live in a way that reflects his character. And so if you read the book of Exodus, you see that God gives his people the Ten Commandments. He then gives them some very detailed laws that set out how people should treat one another. They're about social responsibility and about justice. And then he gives them some instructions about building, creating what's called the tabernacle. Now, the tabernacle was meant to be God's dwelling place on earth. And the idea was that they could go there to worship God and to be in the presence of God. And if you read the 13 chapters in Exodus that describe the tabernacle, you'll see that it's describing a large tent that held all of their holy objects. So it was meant to be a physical and visible reminder that God was with them. In some senses, you could say it was the forerunner of the idea of having a church building. Actually, the New Testament theology is it's the forerunner of having a Christian community. The point is, there was meant to be something visible and physically present that pointed people to God. And this is what God said to his people about making the tabernacle. He said, "From what you have, take an offering for the Lord. Everyone who is willing to bring to the Lord, everyone who is willing is to bring to the Lord an offering." And then he lists all sorts of things that they could bring. Precious metals, fabric, dye, wood, leather. I find that really interesting that there are a range of things that could be offered. And he also says, all who are skilled among you are to come and make everything the Lord has commanded. And in fact, there is a brilliant verse in there about there being some artisans who are filled with the Holy Spirit to do metalwork and woodwork. I think that's such a brilliant theology with musicians here, spirit-filled artisans who create something of God. I love it. So it's very clear from Exodus that playing your part in God's family meant living within God's ethical framework. That was the idea of the law. And it also meant offering your resources and your skills to God to enable the community to see the presence of God in their midst. And what I love about Exodus chapter 35 is the community all turn up with those different donations that are listed. They turn up with gold, linen, olive oil, spices, purple dye. It is a crowdfunder before crowdfunding was even invented. That's exactly what is happening here. And then we're told that the people who had skills like weaving, woodwork, and metalwork also turned up. If you read on into Exodus chapter 6, and this is brilliant, people were so generous that Moses had to tell them to stop bringing their donations. When have you ever heard that taught in church, people? Today, I always like to pride myself. But that literally, they couldn't cope physically with any more donations. They had enough, so they just said, stop bringing them. I love that because that feels just and right to me, not taking more than was needed. So I look forward to preaching that sermon in October. Stop giving, everybody. The church bank account is full. Oh no, Barclays say no more. Aha. Interestingly, if you read other parts of the Old Testament, and especially the books of the law, which are the first five books of the Bible, you'll see that there is a range of guidance about how much people should or shouldn't give if they are members of God's family. And the guidance actually ranges, and James Murdoch, who's not here this morning, this was his Bible study that he shared with me. He said it ranges from anything between giving 1% of your income up to giving 38% of your income to the temple, the tabernacle, God's church. Fascinating. What I like about the passage in Exodus is that Moses says to his people, from what you have, take an offering for the Lord. So not take an arbitrary percentage, where I hasten to add, if you say the arbitrary percentage is 10%, if you have a lot of money, the 90% you have left is a lot. If you don't have a lot of money, the 90% you have left is not a lot. He says, from what you have, take an offering for the Lord. And then the narrator explains, everyone who was willing, not everyone who was coerced, everyone who was willing and whose heart had moved them came and brought an offering to the Lord. I like this because it's not about rules. It's not about rules, it's not about giving a certain percentage, it's not about ticking a box and I've done it. It is about relationship. It's saying, in relationship to God and to the community you belong to, and by reflecting on your own heart, that is how you give. I like that. Which means all of us could potentially give totally different contributions to the church. Olive oil, linen, purple dye. The point is, in my household, I want my son to get to the stage where he spontaneously empties the dishwasher. He doesn't empty the dishwasher because I say, could you please empty the dishwasher, which suggests that I own the dishwasher. I don't own the dishwasher. I'm a woman with a life, for goodness sake. I want him to understand, if you want food on a clean plate, you have to empty the dishwasher and also put it on when it's full. That's the mentality that is being taught here in Exodus. If we want to build this tabernacle in our midst that symbolises God's presence, we all have to play our part. And the great thing is, the principles set out here in Exodus, these ancient principles, are the same ones that undergird the teaching in the New Testament about the church. And so that means that the things I've said about giving an offering of both your resources and your skills, those are the same ideas that we have today about the way in which the church works and the way in which we create shared life together. So there is an expectation that each of us offer our skills and our resources from what we have, not based on what somebody else next to me is doing, from what we have, what I have. And we do that because we want to, not because we feel guilty sitting in church listening to a sermon. Because we want to. And why might we want to give our skills and resources? Well, the answer for me is because I think we are creating something really special here in this place and with this community. God is part of this community, and we are a sign of God's presence in this local community to other people. So we are like the tabernacle, effectively, not the building, that's part of it, sure, but the people who come to this church, we are like the tent in the middle of the community, saying, hey, God is here. And so I give my personal resources to the church because I believe in what we're doing and I believe in who we are. Now, for some of us, if we talk about the idea of giving, the word giving triggers an image of a fundraiser standing in the street, perhaps wearing a fluorescent vest and shaking a bucket asking for donations. Or maybe the idea of giving gives you an idea of a church passing the collection plate up and down the rows. I don't think either of those images are a biblical image of giving. I just don't think that's what is being got at. The biblical idea of giving is more like a party where someone hosts and all of the guests bring a contribution. So one guest brings a salad, another guest brings some jollof rice, another brings cooked chicken, there's bread, wine, dessert. Another person says, I wasn't able to bring food, but I'll do the washing up at the end. It is not about putting a donation in a bucket or a plate and then walking away and thinking, that's it, I've done my bit. It is about making something together that we all get to enjoy. So that's it's not just, I've done my bit, I'm off. It's like, I've contributed something, and through my contribution, there is a greater whole that I benefit from. So what we're building here as a church, it is for the benefit of others. I suspect Adrian may say something about that, the things that we do to serve others, like our refugee food bank. But we are also creating something that is for us to enjoy being part of. Which takes me back to where I started. I want my son to contribute to our family because we are a family and because that's what families do. I want him to play his part at home because he understands that he belongs, that he matters, that we need him, and he does it out of love. And that for me is what we're being told here in the Old Testament about the life of the church and how we create it together. So I encourage you over the next few weeks just to think about what might it mean for you to play your part in this community.
I love that image of Moses crowdfunding for the church tent. I do wonder whether the Israelites had a form of Insta in which they shared the update. Early in the summer, when we prefaced a series of sermons and talks on stewardship, Jevon spoke about how we may be entrusted by other people to look after their things, perhaps, as they go on holiday. Bridget just spoke very eloquently and passionately about how we contribute to things as a family member. Jevon reminded us that this is all a form of stewardship and the ways this occurs in church. He spoke of the desire that church becomes known as a place where we truly seek to put into practice Jesus' command to love one another as he loves us, through the use of our talents and resources, both within the church and the broader community. And as Bridget mentioned, over the next few weeks, we will be looking at different aspects of stewardship in the church context. At time, talents and deliverable ideas, at monetary contributions, and ultimately what each of us feels able to give, freely and joyfully, in our own hearts and minds. Jevon will look at the many projects being run in and out of the church, and the key role of all of you who volunteer, and some of the things we could be doing or doing better with your insights, time, and skills. In a couple of weeks, Tanya from our stewardship team will be looking more closely at the state of the church's finances, and the crucial role of regular giving. Indeed, the need for this to increase if we are to be a self-sufficient church. There are also some special projects, such as the broken wall outside, that needs fixing, so that our youth groups and others can enjoy the church gardens peacefully and safely, which may require special funding. But today, let's talk a little bit more about why. Why here? Why do this here in this little pocket of southeast London at the parish of Good Shepherd with St. Peter? Bridget mentioned that stewardship is part of growing up and being a mature Christian, playing our part in God's family and living within God's ethical framework. I think people who've been here for a while and echoing what Bridget has already said, and those who are relatively new, will agree that something wonderful is building here, something exists here which is outwardly thriving, but also is being carefully cultivated. A concern for our wider community, our duty of care for the environment, providing a warm acceptance of everyone who worships here, an appreciation for all the wonderful diversity and inclusivity that God's creation brings to us. Recent take-up among youth leaders and helpers, diversity in our music, the grace with which cakes might be baked, quizzes hosted, flowers arranged, and catering provided to benefit to all of us. Ultimately, though, there's a ceiling on what we can do right now. Several people are working tirelessly behind the scenes. As winter approaches, energy will be consumed and need to be paid for. There are limits that curtail our ability to produce an abundance that seems so close. So our vision for the parish is to build on the progress we've made. We seek to grow and strengthen this congregation and to make a difference in the community in which we live. We want to grow in number, to grow in faith ourselves and encourage and enable others to do so too, to serve the community, to take the often prayed for desire to use St. Peter's building to its fullest in its new role as a social hub, not just with AFRL and the food bank, but other community organizations. We envisage a virtuous circle where more people in church leads to more home groups, opportunities for prayer and learning, an increasingly broad range of music, of youth engagement and support in the wider community, feeding greater spiritual growth among all of us, a wealth of which in turn feeds further growth. These aren't vague ideas. The St. Peter's Working Group is about to host Lee Green Lives, as Lee Gate itself is cleared, and potential other groups. Our eco-church steering group has won a grant that will help us insulate our entrances. Hannah and Richard are commencing a new home group, while Cherry and James introduce a new monthly evening as well. We're hoping to recruit a schools worker at Trinity School. And of course, there's the quiz down the station pub for all of us to enjoy and attend. We trust that over the coming weeks, with prayer and thoughtfulness, we will be able to make a difference. And, God willing, at some point, Bridget will be delivering that stop giving sermon.